A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. We're going to be spending some time with the Second Amendment Foundation's Alan Gottlieb here in a moment or two. Alan is overseas, actually, hanging out. I'm going to let him tell you where he is hanging out. But in addition to talking with Alan today, we've got, of course, got our recidivist report, our armed citizen story, and our good deed of the day still to come as well. But right now, let's kick off the show with a conversation with the Second Amendment Foundation's Alan Gottlieb. Take a look and a listen. Alan, thanks so much for coming on the program. It is good to talk with you, even though you are overseas. I appreciate you carving out some time for us.
My pleasure, Cam. It's always great to be with you and your listeners and viewers.
So let us tell us, where are you and what are you doing there?
Well, I'm in Nuremberg, Germany, where it's called the EWA, I guess, gun trade show is held. It's sort of like the SHOT Show held in the United States in Las Vegas, except it's more international in scope, has a lot of international firearms manufacturers and accessory companies exhibiting. It's rather large. All the major U.S. companies are here as well. And then, of course, I'm here for the World Forum for Shooting Activities annual meeting, which the Second Amendment Foundation is an executive committee member, and my wife, Julianne, is chairman of their image committee.
So what has been, I'm curious, at the World Forum, what has been the big topic of conversation this year?
Well, a couple areas. One, a lot of countries trying to ban lead ammunition.
Okay.
The second thing is transport problems for both the industry and and say hunters or shooters traveling around the globe with their firearms, commerce. A lot has to do with, banking institutions and financial institutions not wanting to lend money or, engage with companies that make or sell firearms. So it's more international in scope, some of their issues.
You know, we've been dealing with that here at home. I didn't realize that was an international issue where you've got banks. I mean, I guess it makes sense, right? If you've got banks here in the United States that are making life difficult for gun owners in the firearms industry, stands to reason that they'd be doing that overseas, too.
Well, actually, Cam, it started overseas. And what happens over here sometimes, crosses borders, especially in commerce to the United States. So a lot of this is controlled. The EU countries have significant problems. When it comes to firearms, ownership or sale, or use. So, there's a lot of overlap between what we see in the United States starting in Europe.
Absolutely. And I'm curious, I mean, when you're at the World Forum events, what are you hearing from gun owners in other countries about the United States, about the new Trump administration? Are you getting a lot of folks jealous that we've got somebody who actually respects our right to keep and bear arms in the White House?
Well, the answer to that is definitely yes, but it goes a little bit deeper than that, because historically they're jealous that we have a Second Amendment and they don't, to start with. And so now the fact that we're strengthening enforcement of it and giving people, defending their rights more, having an administration who cares about gun owners, is warming to their hearts a whole lot.
Well, that is good to hear. And I'm curious to get your impression about what we've seen in the early days of the Trump administration. You know, we just had Kash Patel named, not only confirmed as the FBI director, but also named as the acting director of the ATF. What do you think about that, Alan?
Well, I think it's great, obviously. There's no doubt that having Kash Patel heading the ATF now and the FBI, and having Pam Bondi as Attorney General, it makes, for Second Amendment issues, it's great for us, it's great for gun owners. And many Biden anti-gun rights policies are definitely biting the dust already. And I expect that this administration will be siding with gun rights groups in current gun rights cases that are already in the courts, reversing positions in both the courts and administrative actions. That's going to have a great impact, positive impact on gun ownership for all of us.
Yeah, we are already seeing the Bondi Department of Justice going in and asking for, 90-day stays in these cases where DOJ was previously defending these Biden era rules. I think yesterday a judge granted a stay in the challenge to the engaged in the business rule that was requested again by the Department of Justice, right, as they're going through these reviews. And, you know, it really could be that going forward, the DOJ says, listen, we're not going to we're going to decline to defend these rules. Right. Because I think that the expectation is that there is going to be a formal recension of all of these Biden era rules. That takes time. There's a process that has to, you know, be basically you got to have that public comment period. The same thing that put the rules in place, you got to have to take the rules away. So it's not just, you know, a snap of the fingers or a flip of the switch. But it really does seem like Bondi is, and again, we haven't seen the results of, you know, this investigation into DOJ policies and ATF rules, but all the signs are that we are going to see a complete 180 from what the Biden administration was doing to the firearms industry and to gun owners.
Most definitely. And of course, we already have the fact that the White House so-called Office on Gun Violence Prevention has been abolished and gone, that Biden put in place. At the same time, you know, Trump has issued the executive order to Bondi to go through all the, you know, government agencies and all their practices and everything to do with Second Amendment issues to ensure that the Second Amendment is not being violated. And you have Pam Bondi just, you know, firing as well the lead attorney for the ATF, who's not exactly pro-gun rights, has been a giant Democratic financial supporter for years. And so the head legal head of ATF is now gone. So we're seeing a lot of progress already. So I'm very happy with what's going on, and I think we're going to see a lot more.
All right. Before we let you get back to everything going on in Nuremberg right now, I do have to ask. So the Supreme Court's meeting in conference again this Friday. I think this is the first conference that they've held for a few weeks anyway. And once again, we've got Snope listed. I think this is the sixth list for Snope. It's the seventh list for Ocean State Tactical. That's the challenge to Rhode Island's ban on large capacity magazines. We've got a number of other cases that are going to be going up in conference here in the coming weeks. Are you feeling optimistic about the Supreme Court granting review to any of these, or maybe, you know, more than one of these Second Amendment cases that they're going to be dealing with? And do you have any thoughts on why the Supreme Court hasn't acted one way or the other on the Maryland assault weapon ban case or the Rhode Island mag ban case?
Well, you know, and of course, that assault weapon ban in Maryland is a Second Amendment Foundation case.
So yeah.
Really, really pins and needles with it. But and you have to answer your question. It's always difficult to get them to take a case. You have to realize, I believe it's over 7,000 cases are appealed to the U.S. Supreme Court every year, and between 200 and 300 get accepted. So the odds of getting anything heard, you know, and ruled on is always an uphill battle. I think, you know, the fact that, and a lot of times criminal cases where people are, you know, have their lives in jeopardy, so to speak, get some preferences with the Supreme Court. So the odds of the civil case has probably even come down a little bit lower to be heard. I think our, you know, the fact that we're dealing with a fundamental enumerated constitutional right question that has some circuit splits and judges going different ways, and in some cases something that knows the previous Supreme Court rulings, gives me feeling that they should be taking it. Why it's taking this long, I don't know. You know, it could be partly because there's other cases going through the courts too, and they'd like to see, you know, maybe they're feeling it's a little premature. We need to let a lot of these other lower courts resolve some issues and then take them all at one time. You know, even if it's only one case that we hear, it will impact all the others. There could be all kinds of good reasons why they're waiting, and there also could be a lot of bad reasons why they're waiting. You know, it takes four judges to decide to hear a case, and it takes five to win it. And maybe we don't have the five lined up to win it quite yet, and so there aren't four votes yet to take it. And it could be lots of things. It's really hard to second guess the United States Supreme Court. So I don't really know. But I think, you know, again, with the right delayed, is it basically a right denied? And assault weapon bans have been around now for a while, mm-hmm. And a lot of people have lost their rights. I think it's really, really important that this case gets heard.
I do, too, because I think that the gun control lobby is taking advantage of the court's hesitation, let's say. you know, we have seen in Colorado, now this bill got watered down a little bit, but, you know, SB 3 defines assault weapons, quote unquote, as, you know, any semi-automatic, gas-operated semi-automatic firearm that can accept a detachable magazine. I mean, that is a semi-auto ban. And we're seeing that introduced in New Mexico as well. I'd be surprised if we don't see this come down the road in California and New York and other anti-gun states. I mean, they are, until the court puts a stop to this, they're going to ban or try to ban more and more commonly owned popular firearms that millions of Americans currently possess.
Yeah. And of course, when it comes to some semi-automatic firearms, there already are some bans in place on, you know, many of those in New York, California, that already have court challenges coming up the ranks in the courts as well.
Right.
And others say Illinois. I mean, the Supreme Court might decide right now, well, we don't want to take this case from Maryland. We want to take the Illinois one, which is working its way up through the courts, and that may be why they don't take our Snopes case on the Maryland assault and ban as an example. So there could be all kinds of reasons behind the scenes, so I can't second guess, but it's very frustrating, and we all want these cases, you know, having a final judicial review, because I think, quite frankly, it definitely infringements on Second Amendment rights, and based on the Bruin decision from the Supreme Court and, you know, the history and text, now being the standard, not any rational basis or heightened scrutiny. Now that there's a more defined way of determining what your Second Amendment rights are, I think it's really important for the court to define this a little bit better.
Absolutely. And again, you know, the work that the Second Amendment Foundation is doing all around the country, more than 50 active lawsuits. You know, and I'm curious, Alan, it seems to me like over the next 4 years, anyway, we're going to see a lot more litigation at the state and local level, right? The concern is going to be less about what the Trump administration is doing compared to what the Biden administration is doing, and more about what Gavin Newsom's doing, right? More about what Kathy Hochul's doing, more about what city councils are doing, you know, to ban gun stores from opening up and things of that nature. Do you see that sort of that Second Amendment battle space shifting a little bit?
I think it already has, quite honestly, because there are only so many federal laws, more of the stricter laws, the actual bans are more coming from, you know, a group of so-called blue states.
Mm-hmm.
And we've already got an awful lot of litigation filed in those states right now. But so I can't say there's going to be a lot more, but like it or not, these cases don't get solved in 1 year. I mean, it's all between, you know, court, you know, stretching things out and appeals, and in different levels, of course, you have to go through. These cases are all going to be around for the next 4 years. So there'll be some new ones added. So the number is going to go up, not down.
Absolutely. And of course, you know, folks want to be a part of that fight, saf.org. That's the website for the Second Amendment Foundation. You can sign up, become a member today. And Alan Gottlieb, as always, I really appreciate you coming on the program and carving out a few minutes for us. Safe travels back, and I look forward to talking to you again very soon.
You got it, Cam. Thank you again.
And thanks to Alan for joining me on the program. Looking forward to having him back again very soon. And I am working on a theory, by the way, about why the Supreme Court has continually relisted Snope and Ocean State Tactical. I'm not quite ready to lay it out there publicly, because there may be a flaw in this thinking, but maybe tomorrow I will have assured myself that, okay, this theory is ready for public consumption. But anyway, fingers crossed that the court does decide to grant cert to one or both of these cases at this Friday's conference. We learn the results next Monday. All right, turning right now to our good deed of the day, our armed citizen story and our recidivist report. We'll start there. Again, don't know if it's a true recidivist report, but it is one of those. Okay, what's going on here? Right, here's the headline. Second man sentenced for bringing machine gun to Castleton Square Mall. Okay, so we're talking about a individual, a couple of them, actually, who were caught at a mall in Indianapolis, the Castleton Square Mall. I call it the Carlton Square Mall. Castleton Square Mall. Zachary Hunter, who's from Bowling Green, Kentucky, and Octavius Reed of Ingalls, Indiana. They were both wearing ski masks. They both had guns near an entrance of the Von Maurer store at the Castleton Square Mall. Now, it was the day after Christmas in 2022. So you could say they were in the ski masks because it was cold outside. Ski masks and guns, generally not a good combination, though it does tend to have one's mind leap immediately to, oh, they're trying to rob us, right? Off-duty police officers who were working as mall security saw the suspects with firearms. They took off, but on-duty officers eventually took both Hunter and Reed into custody. One was in the parking lot, another trying to hide in the restroom of the Buca di Beppo restaurant, also located in the mall parking lot. Indianapolis Police Department Lieutenant Shane Foley said, we don't know what they were there for, but he said, I can say that we're pretty confident that the cooperation between the community member who originally saw the two guys, officers, and Simon Security likely prevented something from happening, whether it was something at the mall or something somewhere else. Individuals with ski masks and guns with machine gun conversion devices are a bad combination. All right. By the way, the Glocks were stolen, according to Lieutenant Foley. He said one was stolen from a house. The other had been stolen just days before in a robbery. So that's the background. Here's the sentence. Zachary Hunter got a plea deal. He had charges of obstruction of justice, resisting law enforcement, and possession of marijuana dismissed. He pleaded guilty to possession of a machine gun, escape, auto theft, resisting law enforcement. And guess what happened? Probation. Yeah. How about that? All of his jail sentence suspended except for the time that he's already served before he took the plea deal. So he's done. I mean, we're told again that walking around with these Glocks, which is a very serious offense, right? And under federal law, it is a serious offense. It's punishable by up to 10 years in federal prison. But ski mask, stolen gun, right? Sounds like he wasn't even charged with possession of a stolen firearm, which is weird to me. But slap on the wrist and time served. His compatriot, by the way, Mr. Reed, took a plea deal in two cases out of Marion County. And as part of the plea deal, he was sentenced to 1 year in the Indiana Department of Corrections and 3 years of home detention for possession of a machine gun. No additional jail time or probation for the escape, auto theft, resisting law enforcement. And again, no charges whatsoever for possessing a stolen firearm at the time. So, listen, Indiana's got really good gun laws. But in this case, I think the statutes maybe the prosecutors and their plea deals could use a little bit of work going forward here. I think machine guns should be absolutely legal. Walking around with a gun you stole, that, on the other hand, I think should remain a criminal offense. All right, on to today's armed citizen story from California, Concord, California, where a man who was fatally shot by a store clerk during an attempted robbery has been identified. The San Francisco Chronicle reports that authorities have identified this individual as 41-year-old Lucas Ray Smith, who was found dead last Friday around 11:30 in the evening by officers who responded to the S&S Fast and Easy Liquor store in Concord, California. According to authorities, Smith walked into that store armed with a shotgun, pointed it at an employee, and demanded access to a safe inside the store. Now, the employee grabbed the shotgun and began to fight with Smith. While he was trying to wrestle the shotgun away, a second store employee drew his legally possessed firearm and fired a round, striking Smith and, again, fatally injuring him. According to the San Francisco Chronicle, both employees cooperated with the police investigation and were not arrested. I mean, why? Even in California, that would be outrageous. Right? Guy walks into a store with a shotgun, tries to rob the place. You fight back in self-defense. You end up arrested. I mean, I'm not saying it can't happen in California, but I'm grateful that it did not this time. Police say they do continue to investigate the incident, saying that it'll be forwarded to the Contra Costa District Attorney's Office for further review. So I guess fingers crossed that we don't have an overzealous prosecutor decide to go after this particular armed citizen. But for now, anyway, it looks like this is, again, pretty clearly a justified use of lethal force. And finally today, our good deed of the day, in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. A 17-year-old from the Cincinnati area who helped to save a man at Skyline Chili. And not by telling him, hey, man, go somewhere else eat. I'm just kidding, Ohioans. I'm not a big fan of the Skyline Chili, but hey, man, whatever floats your boat. I'm a live and let live kind of guy. Brandon Barker is his name. And the man he saved is Phil Hogan, who said that Brandon should have an S on his back like Superman. It was just a couple of days ago when Hogan was at Skyline Chili. Said, I got down or sat down, got my normal four-way. And I'm sitting here and I started eating. The next thing I know, my airway was blocked. He apparently started choking on an oyster cracker. So Brandon Barker is working there at Skyline Chili. He's one of the guys in the drive-thru. And Hogan said Brandon was bringing me over some food. I'm sorry, his coworker, Sam Linder, said Brandon was bringing me over some food so I could hit out the window. And he was walking back and he noticed this gentleman pounding on the bar, looking like he was obviously needing some help. So Brandon Barker ran over, said, I got behind him, wrapped my arms around and put my hands where they needed to be. And I just started to do it, perform the Heimlich maneuver. He said, and out came some food and then he was breathing again. It's pretty amazing. James Buddy is a biology teacher and also a teacher's intro to healthcare. That's where Brandon Barker learned the Heimlich maneuver earlier this year. Channel 12 in Cincinnati spoke with the teacher as well. He said the fact that he was able to stay calm and use his training to take over and save somebody's life was just unbelievable. Brandon Barker's mom, Heather Wolkenberg, said, and just for him to be like, not a big deal when it really is, it's absolutely amazing to me. Hogan also amazed and cheered, says he knew what to do. He was there. He was Brandon on the spot. Barker himself told Channel 12 in Cincinnati, he said, I feel pretty good about it. He said, but I feel like anybody would have done that for him. Well, possibly. You'd like to think that, right? First of all, not everybody knows the Heimlich maneuver. So Brandon had a leg up on maybe other customers and employees in the restaurant. But, you know, as sad as it is, I'm not sure that everybody in that restaurant would have done what Brandon Barker did. How many stories have we seen, for instance, where somebody is clearly in need, clearly struggling, like on the side of the road, right? And the cars just keep driving by. How many times have we seen stories where, you know, somebody's accosted in public, maybe in a subway car, and people avert their eyes? Now, in this case, again, maybe it's a little bit different. The oyster cracker, not a individual, was harming Mr. Hogan. So maybe folks would have leapt to his aid regardless. But Channel 12 didn't describe, you know, a crush of customers and patrons there at Skyline Chili rushing to help Mr. Hogan. It was Brandon Barker who stepped up, performed the Heimlich maneuver, saved Hogan's life. So Brandon Barker, we thank you for your very good deed. Now, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. I want to thank you very much for coming on, being a part of the program today, coming on the show. I guess you are part of the show, right? I mean, it is company. So tomorrow, we're going to be talking with the attorney for Dexter Taylor. He is the Brooklyn man who was sentenced to 10 years in a maximum security prison for the crime of building his own firearms. Yeah, 10 years in a New York prison. And I'm really looking forward to talking with his attorney about this, because obviously the appeals process is underway. But I also ran across another story out of New York City not long ago. This was in the New York Post. It was published February 19th. Headline, Julia Fox's brother gets prison time in 3D ghost gun case as his dad calls him harmless. I have to confess, I don't know who Julia Fox is. I assume a celebrity of some sort, but yeah, I don't know. Anyway, her brother, Christopher Fox, pleaded guilty to criminal possession of a weapon in the third degree last December for making ghost guns with his 3D printer inside his parents' Upper East Side apartment. Except for the guilty plea, sounds very similar to Dexter Taylor's case, right? Well, Dexter Taylor got 10 years in a maximum security prison. Christopher Fox was sentenced to 1 1/3 to 4 years in prison for that very same crime, quote unquote. So again, I am looking forward to talking with Dexter Taylor's attorney, not only about Mr. Taylor's case, but also about the disparity of treatment that we are seeing here in New York when it comes to these prosecutions for home-built firearms. Anyway, that's going to be on tomorrow's Bearing Arms Cam and Company, so be sure to come back and tune in for that. Also, be sure to check out BearingArms.com throughout the day. Today, we're keeping you up to date on all of the latest Second Amendment news and information from all across the nation. And if you like what you see, I would encourage you to become a VIP, VIP Gold, or VIP Platinum member. You will get exclusive benefits and content at every tier of your VIP membership. And you will also be supporting the independent pro-Second Amendment journalism that we're doing at Bearing Arms and across the Town Hall Media family of websites, Hot Air, Red State, PJ Media, Twitchy, all the rest. Of course, townhall.com, right? And if you are a VIP Gold or VIP Platinum member, you can take part in our weekly live chat with Hot Air's Ed Morrissey. We do that every Wednesday, 1:30 p.m. So hopefully you'll be there next week as well. Enjoy the rest of your Hump Day Wednesday. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.